Welcome to the Homeschool Sanity Show, your weekly prescription for happier, healthier homeschool living. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Wilson, Christian psychologist turned homeschooling mother of six.
Hey, homeschoolers. I always want this podcast to serve you in your homeschooling. One area that I haven't devoted as much attention to is special needs. I want to change that. In today's episode, we'll hear from Colleen Kessler about homeschooling a child with sensory processing disorder. If you have a child with SPD or suspect you might, I hope the interview is helpful to you. I would love to hear about other topics you'd like me to do shows on going forward. I've gotten quite a number of questions lately about testing, so I'll be devoting an episode to that. If you have an idea, drop me a line at psychowith6@gmail.com. That's the number 6. You can also message me on Facebook at the PsychoWith6 page. These ideas also help me know what to speak about as part of the great homeschool conventions. This year, I'll be speaking in Fort Worth, Texas, Greenville, South Carolina, Cincinnati, Ohio, Ontario, California, and Jacksonville, Florida. I like recording these podcasts, but I love chatting with you face to face. Register for the Great Homeschool Convention at greathomeschoolconventions.com and make plans to attend my sessions and to chat with me at the Grammar Galaxy Books booth. I'd like to thank our network sponsor, the Christian Standard Bible, for making this podcast possible. Here's more about this new version of God's Word.
Reading the Bible can encourage a person in their relationship with the Lord as much as any other spiritual discipline. The Christian Standard Bible is an English translation that strives to be faithful to the original languages without sacrificing clarity. The CSB maintains accuracy while remaining easy to read. It is a translation that pastors can feel confident preaching from, and the person in the pew can feel comfortable reading from in their own devotional time. The Word of God is living and effective, transforming the hearts of people, and our hope is that CSB is useful in more people being encouraged to read the Bible and share it with others. Learn more at csbible.com.
Now for this week's topic, homeschooling a child with sensory processing disorder. I have a bonus for you. Jackie Nunez of wondermoms.org is guest posting on Psycho with Six this week on SPD. She is a former pediatric nurse and now a full-time homeschool educator. She and her husband have 3 children. Their middle child suffered a traumatic brain injury when she was 4. Now 11 years old, she is hearing impaired and uses a wheelchair. Jackie and 2 other moms created Wonder Moms as a project to share real talk, helpful information, and practical advice with parents of kids who have intellectual disabilities, Down syndrome, autism, language and speech delays, deafness, chronic illness, and traumatic brain injury. You can find a link to Jackie's post in the show notes at homeschoolsanity.com/SPD. Colleen Kessler is my guest on the podcast today. Colleen is the blogger and podcaster behind Raising Lifelong Learners. She is also an author with a master's in gifted education. I know you'll enjoy our interview.
Colleen, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here on the Homeschool Sanity Show. I am hoping you can begin by telling us more about you and your family.
Thank you so much for having me, Melanie. I'm excited to be here today. I can tell you a little bit about me. So I'm Colleen Kessler, and I run the blog and the podcast and Facebook page Raising Lifelong Learners, where I talk a lot about parenting differently wired children, particularly those who are gifted and or have a twice exceptionality, which is giftedness along with another neurological, physical, emotional, or learning disability. I have 4 kids of my own, an almost 16-year-old. He'll be 16 this month. I don't know where the time goes. And an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old. We live in Northeast Ohio, and just kind of we follow an eclectic kind of path in our homeschooling, more interest-led and student kind of passion-driven, kind of fall down lots and lots of different rabbit holes and go on lots of adventures. So that's kind of us in a nutshell. I'm a former classroom teacher who has a master's degree in gifted education. So my specialty is gifted. I was a gifted intervention specialist for almost 2 decades before I came home to write full time. I'm also an author, and then kind of fell into the homeschooling adventure and journey accidentally and a little bit under duress. And here we are, 8 years later, still doing it and loving it. So,
okay, well, that's great. Thank you for that kind of insight into your family. So you mentioned that you fell into homeschooling a little bit under duress. Can you tell us more about that, how you decided to start homeschooling?
Sure. Yeah. So I taught, like I said, for almost 2 decades. I was first a 3rd grade teacher and then an intervention specialist for kids who were gifted or twice exceptional, and advocated for them heavily within the classroom. I left teaching originally not to homeschool my children, but to freelance write for the educational market and write nonfiction books for kids. So I planned to do that while my kids were at school, and then be home, you know, baking cookies and having them waiting for them when they got off the bus. My husband is a teacher. He is a reading specialist and a teacher advocate. And we just assumed, like so many others, that, you know, school would be the best fit for our kids. Our oldest is profoundly gifted. He, which is kind of a funny story in and of itself, which I won't go completely into because it's not totally related to the topic, except that that whole idea of like the shoemaker's kids going shoeless is definitely a theme in our world. I knew that there was something different about him from the beginning, but I was completely immersed in the world of gifted education. And so my normal was skewed just based on the kids I worked with every day. And so he just seemed like most of the kids I saw on a daily basis. And it didn't really click that that wasn't the average. And so it took a lot of, he was referred for sensory processing disorder. He was referred for anxiety. He was referred for ADHD and all sorts of behavioral issues in kindergarten and then into the beginning of 1st grade. His preschool teacher had described him as an extreme learner, and she was able in a classroom of 4 kids, 5 kids to compensate for that and work with him. And so when he got into the regular classroom, it started becoming more apparent that that box wasn't really going to fit him. But in kindergarten, he was in an experimental program that the school district was doing at that time, where they had 3 classrooms open to each other. So there was a lot of movement, a lot of challenges, a lot of differentiation within the way they ran their 3 classrooms, and they had a lot of support, numerous teachers and aides in that room for 3 classrooms worth of kids. But then in 1st grade, he got into a traditionally kind of molded classroom, a lot of sitting down, a lot of, you know, here's the lecture, the presentation, now we've got to do the 50 problems, and then you need to keep yourself busy with a book or something while you wait for everybody to catch up. And unfortunately for classroom teachers, my son is not really great with hurry up and wait, and just caused a lot of trouble. And that particular district was not it wasn't equipped to deal with the needs that he had that early on. So one of the, and this is a quick little gifted thing, but one of the issues that gifted education has in a lot of school districts is they don't start programming until third or fourth grade in a lot of cases. And so kids who are profoundly gifted in particular, so there's a range, just like there's a range in other neurological issues that, you know, they kind of follow along a spectrum. And so you can be gifted, but then you can be highly gifted and exceptionally gifted and profoundly gifted. And it's just the further you are standard deviation wise away from average IQ scores. And he falls 2 to 2.5 standard deviations above average. And because of that, is always looking for ways to bring his brain novelty. And so he would find novel ways of disrupting or undermining or getting other kids distracted. And because of those behavioral challenges, they weren't able to nor willing to meet his academic needs until the behavioral problems became controlled. And at the time, I had a toddler and a newborn nursling. And so I couldn't be up at the school as much as I needed to in order to advocate for his needs, because I knew now that we had, at that point, we had scores on him. I knew that once the academic needs were taken care of, the behavioral issues would fall into place. But in order to advocate in a district that's not used to accommodating for a kid so outside the norm, you need to be up there advocating frequently. And with a toddler and an infant, I just couldn't be. And so we looked into private schools. We looked into a couple different gifted magnet schools. And the closest one that would have been a great fit was a 55-minute drive one way. Mm. And I live in Northeast Ohio. And so, like, I could only picture the winters drive becoming an hour and a half with a toddler and an infant screaming in the backseat. So we didn't have another choice. We knew that that classroom was going to continue damaging his self-esteem and his intellect. And then I wouldn't be able to meet his needs in any other way. So we pulled him and just dove into it, not knowing anybody who homeschooled, not knowing anything about it, except that I have a background in education, so surely I could do this to some degree.
Hmm. Wow. Well, that is an interesting story, and I'm so glad that you shared it. I know anyone who hasn't heard your story will really find it interesting, like I did. So, okay. Today, we're going to be talking about sensory processing disorder. And you mentioned in the course of, you know, the school trying to determine what might be your son's issue, that sensory processing disorder was an option. But can you tell my audience what sensory processing disorder is?
Yes. So, like, in a nutshell, and I'm going to put a disclaimer here that I am a gifted expert, and in the course of studying all that goes along with giftedness and other issues that are related to neurological differences, I have a little bit of knowledge about a lot of different disorders and challenges and issues, but my main experience in education is in how the gifted brain works. That being said, many, many, many gifted kids have that twice exceptionality that I talked about before. So I've come to learn about a lot of different things, and then in working with my own family. So in a nutshell, it's a neurological condition that where the brain either has trouble receiving, like coming, processing the stimuli that comes in, or responding to what's coming in. So kids and adults too with sensory processing disorder can be desensitized to stimuli and not, so there's like two facets to it. They're either under responders or over responders. They're either avoiding stimuli or seeking that stimuli, so they can be super sensitive to it or super under sensitive to it. So for example, these are kids who who, you know, might be really, really sensitive to scratchy tags or seams on clothing or noise in different locations, in like restaurants and classrooms and things like that. They may be very sensitive to images, like on a movie screen. And I have a story about that I'll come back to. Or they could be undersensitive. For example, that oversensitivity could come to like pain and things too. Scratches could be like your leg was cut off, you know, the equivalent of a life-threatening injury, but it's really just like a scratch that's not even bleeding. Whereas on the other hand, some people who struggle with sensory processing disorder are under-stimulated or under-respond to those kinds of stimuli. So you could be screaming at them and they're not even realizing that you're talking to them, or they are bleeding and have a gash and didn't even realize that they'd been cut, or don't want you to touch them at all because physical touch actually hurts them. So it's a misfiring of the processing, like the transmitters in the brain that process any kind of sensory stimuli. And the senses all deal with, you know, all five of the senses: touch, taste, sight, hearing, and I'm missing one. There's five. Whatever the fifth one is, but it's vision. Related to vision. Yeah, visual. So it's either related. It's related to any of the five senses, and it's an overstimulation or an understimulation to those. Does that kind of describe it?
Yeah, definitely. So, do I understand correctly, Colleen, that you have a daughter who had signs of SPD? When did you first notice those signs, and what were her specific issues, if I'm correct about that?
Yeah, you're correct. So my oldest, like we said, it was brought up in the course of all of the different exams and testing that we did to figure out what the heck was going on, in an attempt, truthfully, to keep him in the school system, because at that time, that was all we knew. And so I read a lot about a lot of different things. And so so he has never been officially diagnosed with sensory processing disorder. He does have some of the symptoms and signs, but he also has a profoundly gifted brain. And oftentimes that discrepant of a wiring issue can make it seem like they're ADHD, or they have SPD, or they have OCD, or they have anxiety disorder, or whatever. So we're still not sure. He may have sensory processing disorder too, but when we feed his intellect, a lot of those signs disappear. My daughter, on the other hand, showed a lot of sensory seeking behavior from the time she was really, really small, but it's not always easy to pinpoint. So some of those things that I mentioned when I was describing what sensory processing disorder is can be hard to differentiate between whether it's kids being kids or somebody with a true disorder. And so that's where we were with her when she was little. She always wanted to be held. Whenever she was nursing, she had her hand down my shirt so she could have skin-to-skin contact. And, you know, that's not super abnormal for a nursing baby to want to have that skin to skin. As she grew older and outgrew nursing or weaned, she still, when she would get upset, she'd put her hand down my shirt or up like where my shirt and my pants met so she could get the skin on my waist. She fidgeted with my hair all the time. She sought hugs, and her hugs were not hugs. They were like clinging to you, and eventually you had to peel her away. And so, but for a clingy kiddo or the third child, when there's definite other needs in the house, that's not completely abnormal either. So we didn't tease it out right away, but the signs in retrospect were there from the get-go. She always wanted, she delighted in music. She sought songs with strong beat. She was very, very sensitive to moving pictures. So movies, it was very real to her. So we couldn't watch anything that could be construed as even marginally scary. Anything that was like, mm-hmm. you know, would make you jump. It would throw her into just upset. She wouldn't necessarily cry a lot, but she would then want to be hugged mm-hmm. and held. And so like those signs were there from the very beginning. What started us on the road to trying to figure out exactly what was going on, if this was just clinginess, if this was just anxiety, if this was truly a sensory disorder, if it was, you know, autistic, you know, autism spectrum disorder, mm-hmm. what it was, because we weren't sure and still we're in the process of trying to figure out exactly if we figured it all out. So we haven't discounted some of those other things yet. We started noticing things that were getting in the way of her everyday being and her everyday safety. So, for example, one of the main things that started us down the path of, okay, we need to see a psychologist, and then maybe we need to see an occupational therapist, or maybe we need to see somebody else, were things that made us nervous for her safety. So Logan she's 9 now. She has been seeing an occupational therapist and a physical therapist now for 2.5 years. She just recently graduated from physical therapy, and we've cut down occupational therapy to once every other month, just to put some strategies that we've been really having success with in place without the crutch of the therapist. But for 2 years, she saw both an OT and a PT weekly. The biggest thing actually that sent us to like, we need to do something, even if it's just a therapist to get her to have some better coping mechanisms, and it's not true SPD. She was doing a lot of hanging. And by that, I mean literally hanging on anything that didn't move. So she would put her hands, and I'm putting my hands the way she used to, so I could try to figure out a way to describe it. She would put like one hand on top of another, and then all of her body weight on those two hands on the edge of a table or a chair or a counter or a desk, and just like lean over whatever piece of furniture that was to put all of her weight on her upper body and her hands, and then pull her legs off the ground and just hang there and tighten up her arms and her upper body to bear all of the weight of her body. And she would do that anytime she was overwhelmed, anytime we were in a setting where there was a lot going on, and she would do it without assessing what she was putting her weight on. So there were times where she would put her weight on like a TV tray, and the TV tray would collapse, or an unbalanced table, and the table would flip over on her. She didn't have the awareness of what object she was hanging on. She just had the intense need to get that input, and we were afraid she was going to really seriously hurt herself or someone else. Mm-hmm. And she would swing, she would rock, she would spin and overbalance and then fall into different things, and then hang or lean onto somebody else, causing them pain. She also had this unbridled need to hug or touch anybody in any place we were, and couldn't stop herself. So she would hug people that didn't want to be hugged, or rub the arm of somebody she barely knew. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of things were just not, they're not, number one, they're not safe. And number two, they're just not socially appropriate. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have the awareness of what is and isn't appropriate in different settings. And then on top of that, as I started reading, like, I didn't know what to search. So like hanging, putting your weight on something, constant touching, it started bringing up other things that were like, oh yeah, she does that too. Oh yeah, that does describe her. So other things like staring off into space for long periods of time, not seeming to be aware of her surroundings. She wears her socks inside out. She only wears leggings, soft clothing. She has like one pair of jeans she'll wear now, but never anything with buttons or snaps or any kind of metal of any kind, of any sort, you know, no metal grommets, anything that could rub against her. She's very sensitive to things rubbing unless she's doing the rubbing. And she does rub things against her face or her cheek often. So if it's something soft and she's attracted to it, she'll rub that constantly to the point where it can, you know, rub her raw in the cheek. Now, this is all stuff that we noticed before we sought help.
Okay.
So we've come a long way. Does that help?
Yes, for sure. That was an excellent description. Okay, so my question then is, you were having all of these behaviors that she was exhibiting, and you were getting help for them, which is wonderful. But did you have to adapt your homeschooling for her needs? And if you did, how did you do that?
Yes, that's a really good question. And so the first thing that I want to say before we go any further is, it is, if you suspect any of these kinds of things, you're going to need a team and you're going to need to start building a toolbox. So that's how we approach all of anything we do that relates to Logan. So whether it's going to a co-op, going to a movie, going to a holiday party, going to a doctor's office visit, whatever, we have this kind of virtual toolbox in our heads and our hands that we always have different things we can pull out at a moment's notice. And one of the first things we did was try to figure out who helps sensory processing disorder and how do we get to that type of person to be able to give us the things that we need. Because there's tons and tons and tons of resources online, and there are lots of people writing about it. And many of them do have a background in occupational therapy. And an occupational therapist is the biggest and best resource that you're going to want to find. And there are OTs out there writing blogs and writing books and writing resources that can get you started. And then there's a lot of parents who are writing about things related to SPD and the things that they've done at home or in the classroom to modify for it based on their own experiences. But sensory processing disorder, because it relates to all of the senses, and then some senses or like offshoots of those senses that you don't even know of as a layperson, you really want to seek the help of an occupational therapist. And most insurances cover at least a small number of OT visits a year. It's just like physical therapy. Like you'll get, I don't know, like 13 visits a year or 10 visits a year, or depending on how good your insurance is. And then there are other occupational therapists that can work with you to at least give you one visit. So even one visit helps, where you can say, can you take a look at my child? Help me figure out which senses they are seeking stimuli, which ones they're avoiding stimuli, and give me like a couple things that I can use, terms and keywords, to then go search to find the right kinds of help. Because the wrong help isn't going to do anything but exacerbate the issue. So what we have done as a result to help modify really all of our living, because there's nothing we can do that doesn't affect or isn't affected by her sensory processing disorder. Mm-hmm. The first thing we did was see a therapist who did this big, long overview first visit, where she tried a whole bunch of different things to tease out where she is seeking and where she is avoiding, and then help us through that. So she was seeing a therapist every week for a while, and a weekly visit for an hour is only the tip of the iceberg. So we would spend the last like 10 minutes of every visit talking about what she had tried, what had worked and what didn't, and then how we can use that at home. And so our mindset shifted to, this is an education for us and more so than for her. The therapy became our education. So one of us would always go back with her, so we could watch what was going on. And even if, you know, you can't you know, talking to your listeners, even if you can't get in with a therapist, or, you know, get your insurance to approve a bunch of visits, or if you don't have insurance, look at images of what like an occupational therapy gym looks like, and start using those as ideas for holiday and birthday gifts. That is one of the biggest things we've done. Everything that we buy for her now, and actually a lot of the things that we buy for her siblings, can be dual purposed. They're fun, but they serve a purpose. So if you notice, like, for example, Logan is hanging on a lot of things, and needs that upper body input. Our big Christmas gift for the kids a few years ago was one of those dome climbers for the backyard. Mm-hmm. And Amazon has them on sale all the time, like two or three times a year for like $120. And they retail for like $350 or more. And so we watched for sales and we bought it on Amazon, and it was like $120 shipped, and put it up in the backyard. And if she needs to hang, she can safely hang on that. But it's also a great place to play tag and throw blankets over and make a fort in the backyard and, mm-hmm. you know, pack it with a tarp and make it an igloo in the wintertime. And so there are things like that that you can do. We replaced on the kids' jungle gym in the backyard. We replaced the regular swing with a disc swing, one of those big circular swings that has like a net in the middle. I don't know what they're called, but two or three kids can sit on it. It's a little bit, you know, pricey when you can price them out at like occupational therapy supply stores or playground stores, and you can get them anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to like, you know, $75 or whatever. And so she can go on there and she can spin if she needs to. She can just lay and swing with no resistance. Or the kids can all climb on it and play. We have, the kids have a loft bed in their bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I bought a $15 Fisher-Price disc swing. It's a plastic disc on a rope, and put it in an Easter basket one year. And now there is a swing hanging from the loft bed. So little things, because those are just little that, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to have playground equipment anyway. So invest in a playground equipment piece that's going to also be able to double up for therapy. You're going to be filling an Easter basket or a Christmas stocking or whatever anyway. So use, you know, Play-Doh, or get the Theraputty instead of Play-Doh that's a little bit thicker and gives more resistance for a sensory seeker. I'm trying to think of some of the other things we do. Mm-hmm. We subscribe to a really great subscription box that's fairly new, and I had heard about it, and I did one box as a review and then immediately signed up ourselves. It's called Sensory Theraplay, and every month they send a subscription box. It's like, I don't know, it's like it's somewhere between $25 and like $35, depending on if you buy a year's worth or mm-hmm. You know, 6 month subscription or whatever. And I signed up for a year, and every month we get a box that has like five or six different therapy toys that all the kids like because they're fun and they could be used as fidgets. Mm-hmm. And it comes with a really nice brochure. It's curated by an OT, and the brochure explains how each of those can be related to a different sensory need, and so how you can use those with your kids, whatever their needs are. And so we now have this huge like toy box full of squishies and weighted toys and weighted blankets, weighted lap pads, and different things like that. So if we're feeling, if one of the kids, any of the kids are feeling overloaded or stressed, they can go there. But then I can also, if I notice Logan needs something, I can say, hey, why don't you go get the gumball squishy? Or it looks like you're having trouble sitting and focusing, but we need to focus for this moment. Why don't you go get your weighted lap pad and put it on your lap? So I can use those. They use them for play and gravitate towards them, but then I can use them for specific input that I know that she needs. Back to the original question is, how have we modified? We also modify what she does. So we use We use the same handwriting program that her occupational therapist uses, which is Handwriting Without Tears, mm-hmm. a very common homeschool curriculum. Mm-hmm. We had been using just regular handwriting worksheets that my husband brought home. He's a reading specialist, so he works with first graders. So he'd bring handwriting papers home with like the three lines. But we switched all of that around because the OT preferred that method for mm-hmm. her fine motor issues. And so we use that. And we use some of the strategies that the OT does, helping her understand how her brain is revving. So her body is compared to a motor. And we ask her if her engine is running in the green, yellow, or red zone. Mm-hmm. So if it's in the green zone, she's perfect and ready and able to focus on whatever it is that we need. If she's yellow, she's a little sluggish and might need to go do some yoga. Yoga is alerting for her. I know it's very calming for many people, but yoga moves are alerting for her. So they get her moving and trigger something in her brain to get started. And so we've got specific yoga moves that we can use to get her in the right frame of mind to do something. And if she's in the red zone, then we know that she needs a couple things to calm her. Gum helps calm her. Blowing bubbles helps calm her. Hanging or swinging can help calm her. So we'll ask her to take an inventory throughout the day of how she's doing, or if we notice she's having trouble in a specific area, we can ask her really quickly, how's your engine running? She can stop. It's like a trigger phrase that we use for her to help her see where she's at, so she can help determine which of those tools in that toolbox she needs to get her right back on track.
Well, that's excellent. So, I mean, I think other homeschooling parents whose child has SPD can really take a lot out of what you've already done with your daughter. But I'm wondering if you have any other tips for homeschooling parents.
For homeschooling parents who yeah. have, or who either have or suspect that they have a child with
Correct.
SPD.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I've been talking a lot about this on my own podcast and in some Facebook Lives I've been doing with just parents of differently wired kids, however they're differently wired. I think the biggest tip that I can give to anybody is to become a student of your child first and foremost. Really take some time beyond the getting to know like what they want to be when they grow up, what their learning style is, you know, how they best, you know, what they're interested in and what kind of unit study you want to give them. Become a student of them holistically. What kinds of things get them off task? What kinds of things get them on task? Because that's really an extension to how your engine's running. You know, what is going to make you be able to buy in, be in a space where you can buy into learning, or what is going to be, I don't know, like a sign for us as parents that they're maybe not in the right frame of mind and we need to do something. So become a student of your kiddo so you know where they are and what they might need, and then develop your own toolbox for those different areas in which they fall, those different struggles, you know, with which they deal. And then use those liberally and don't feel like you're failing somehow because they can't automatically go to the kitchen table and sit down and do their work. Some kids are wired that way. My other daughter is wired that way. I can say it is time for math and she will sit down and she will pull out her math book and she'll get it done because she knows if she gets it done, she can go on to the other things she wants to do. And some kids just aren't wired that way. And it's not a reflection of your parenting. It's just showing you that kiddo just needs something different. And so becoming a student of them so you know what it is they need when they need it, and then being okay with, hey, they need this at that time. And then also not listening to your inner critic when you're out and about. So we've had to really train ourselves as parents, my husband and I, to not feel embarrassed or like we're bad parents when we go to a holiday gathering with family. or we go to homeschool co-op, or to a movie that a child needs to be taken out of and needs to sit on the bench and not go back into. Being okay with who your kiddo is and what they need at that moment, and giving them what they need. I always swore up and down that I was not going to be the parent who had a kid on a device at a party. And the truth of the matter is, sometimes a differently wired kid needs a way to check out, and that is the least restrictive way to allow them to check out at a gathering. Mm-hmm. So we now bring a Kindle Fire to every holiday gathering, and we designate. Now, I don't want that. They know that if they need that, it's not an invitation to sit at the table where everybody is and be plugged in. Mm-hmm. So we designate a place, whether it's the room where the coats are or the foyer or somewhere away from everybody else, where they can go, put on their earphones, watch a quick show that we've downloaded, read a book, play an app for a few minutes, refocus, calm down, and then come back when they're ready. So honoring what your kid needs when they need it, and knowing that not every other parent out there or every other relative or a stranger is going to get it. And yeah, they might pass judgments, but you're not ultimately being judged by them. You're being judged by our Creator and how you handled the kids that He gave you. Mm-hmm. And so allowing yourself the grace to parent your kids the way they need to be parented.
Oh, that's so good. I love that, Colleen. I just really, really love that, the advice, not to feel like a failure, but to use the tools that work with your child liberally, because that is being a good parent.
Yes.
That is being a good parent. It's not just doing what other people do. It's tailoring your parenting and your homeschooling for your child and his or her needs. So I love that, and I so appreciate that you shared that. Well, this has been fantastic, Colleen, and I know that my listeners are going to want to connect with you. They're probably going to ask you some questions, and they're going to want to listen to your podcast and the Facebook Lives that you've been doing. So tell us where we can connect with you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so my site is raisinglifelonglearners.com, and everything is there. You can also find my podcast. Everything's the same name, so it's really easy. You can find my podcast on anywhere that you listen to your podcast. So it's also called Raising Lifelong Learners. My name's in there too, with Colleen Kessler. So you can search that on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever. You can also find links to all the episodes over on the site. And then my Facebook page is Raising Lifelong Learners. And every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, I do a 45-minute to 60-minute Facebook Live where I typically tackle just one topic related to parenting and homeschooling differently wired kids. So we've talked about things like schedules, because schedules look a little bit different with differently wired kids, and anxiety and sensory processing disorder and giftedness and all sorts of other things. So there's always a great conversation going on there. But if you start with Raising Lifelong Learners, you can find everything else.
Well, that is fantastic. Thank you so much, Colleen.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
To find any of the links mentioned in this episode, including where to learn about our sponsor, the Christian Standard Bible, visit homeschoolsanity.com/SPD. Have a happy homeschool week.
Thank you for joining me for the Homeschool Sanity Show. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.